Moncrief on News Talk.
Fionnuala Jones filling in for the next couple of days. Jonathan DeBerka Butler is in studio for Around the World now. Hello.
How are you doing?
Where are we off to first today?
We'll decided to go to Thailand first. Now, it is connected with things that are going on in the Middle East, however, because there's no getting away from it, Fionnuala.
Energy crisis.
That's going on. So it's energy crisis and how it's hitting the people of Thailand and how some of them are reacting to it. It seems to be hitting people in Asia a lot more than the rest of us at this point, but you never know, the rest of us might catch up. But certainly in Thailand, they're being affected. And one particular individual, a 48-year-old undertaker by the name of Preacha, he looks after the undertaking duties, shall we say, in a Buddhist temple there in northern Thailand, right? Mm-hmm. And as you know, an awful lot of people, when they leave this earth in Thailand, they decide to send them off through cremation. Okay. Mm. Now, for a very long time, the cremation was done and the fires were fired using charcoal. But recently enough, they changed to diesel because they figured it would be cheaper.
Okay.
And it hasn't turned out that way, unfortunately, for them. All right. At least not recently. So this particular individual went to get his usual Sunday fill of three containers, 50 quid's worth, 50 euros worth of diesel that he needed to get in order to bring it back to the temple that he works at and do his cremation business. But he was stopped. Okay. And that's because the government are trying to restrict people from, you know,
stockpiling.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So he was stopped and he was a bit annoyed about that because he couldn't carry out his duties. So he went back on the Sunday, but this time he came back with a dead body in the boot of his car. So when he was refused the second time, he was Facebook streaming this, by the way, or he was on Facebook Live and he was streaming this. And when he was refused the second time, he brought the attendants out and he said, "Look, I'm not stockpiling. I genuinely need the diesel in order to be able to cremate the body that was given to me."
Yeah.
Now, very frustratingly, although I checked 7 or 8 sources, I couldn't find out if in the end he actually got the diesel.
I was just about to ask.
More than anything, I think it's indicative of the crisis that's unfolding in Thailand when it comes to energy.
Is their government doing anything in terms of, you know, subsidies and trying to, you know, make it a bit easier for people so that they can get the fuel? This is such a specific example, but as you said, it's obviously affecting people kind of down the chain and down the line in these countries in particular.
Yeah, so the government had introduced subsidies, but they were burning through so much cash that they had to get rid of them or at least reduce them. So that's not gone down very well. And there's a new government coming into play there. I don't think the Prime Minister's been sworn in yet, but that's kind of nailed on as it stands. But it's a very bad start for him. Big crisis there.
Yeah, God, what a state of flux, my God. Moving on to Madagascar then, they're bringing in a novel way to potentially hire a new government that I'm sure I can already imagine the texts being like, we should get that here.
Yes,
we should
absolutely
get that here.
Yes, they're looking at bringing in lie detector tests. Okay, so they're going to use polygraphs. So a bit of background here, if I may, Fionnuala.
Yes, please.
The last time we spoke about Madagascar was last year. So in September of last year, there was a riot, effectively, or weeks of riots. And in fact, there was a kind of a youth uprising.
Okay. What were they protesting about?
Yeah, good question. So overall, you know, Madagascar would be a very poor country. There's about 31 million people living there, right? And a lot of them would be under 30, right? And there's high youth unemployment. And then it all came to a head, basically, when there was water shortages and power cuts and people had enough. So they took to the streets. It lasted about 3 weeks. A couple of dozen people were killed as a result. But there was a critical turning point in early October when the head of a kind of an elite military group there called CAPSAT, he said he was going to support the protesters. And just like that, the president of the country decided to up sticks and he went off on a French plane to Dubai and he's still there, right?
Okay.
So this new guy who's in place, Michael Randriandarina, he's been there since October, right?
Okay.
And he appointed a new cabinet, but these Gen Z protesters weren't happy with it. They were basically saying, okay, you just took the old regime and replaced them with more people from the same regime.
You've just put different lipstick on a pig or
exactly,
something.
Exactly, exactly, right? And, you know, there's not much change here. Nothing's changing. So he got rid of the cabinet in early March,
okay.
to pander to them. And now he's saying he's appointed a new prime minister who used to be the head of the anti-corruption body there. And he's saying that between himself and this new prime minister, they're going to appoint a new cabinet and they're going to do it, first off, by interviewing people who have gone through a lie detector test.
I think it's so interesting that he's also said, quote, we're not looking for someone who's 100% clean, but over 60%. Yeah. That way Madagascar will finally be able to develop. So it's like, okay, well, a little bit corruption is fine, but not, you can't go full 100% corrupted, please, because we're trying to do something here.
Absolutely. So it's an interesting one, all right. So you only have to pass it by 60% and you'll still be in the mix.
Yeah, oh my God, there you go. I'm sure a few people listening going, well, if that's the case, then maybe I could make it in politics in Madagascar, probably. How do we think they're talking about holding elections as well by late 2027? How do you think that's going to fare with the way this is going?
Well, it depends on what they come up with in the end, or how this new cabinet works. Yeah. Like in all the years that I've been doing this slot, and you get military personnel, shall we say, taking over and saying that they'll only be there as interim presidents.
It We're doesn't usually go that warm,
long.
Guys.
Exactly. It usually doesn't happen that long. So they have said end of this year, but this president is being put under pressure to pin down a date, but he hasn't given one yet. And I would not be surprised if he doesn't.
Is there an example of governments ever doing this before, or ever saying about the polygraphs, or is this the first instance knowledge?
It's the first I've ever seen this, there I have to say.
Novel way to vet the new candidates, anyway, that's for sure. Like, we're doing the same thing that we're doing to celebrities. You know, like Vanity Fair does a big thing where they interview the celebrities and they have two polygraphs. Yeah. Why not the politicians, says they? Hungary, then. There's a lot going on here with Orban and et al. It's kind of never ending, isn't it? Yeah. With the election looming as well.
Yes, well, that's a great point to start off on. So for context, there are there's a general election on April the 12th. And as it stands, Viktor Orban, who's been in power since 2010, is not going to win. All right.
Do you reckon?
Well, that's what the opinion polls are saying. Okay. Right now. And they've been fairly consistent over the last couple of months. So it's within that context that I'm giving you this story here, right? Because the government there have charged a very well-known investigative journalist, a man by the name of Szabolcs Panyi, for espionage.
Okay.
Now, cut a long story short, he did an investigative piece into the foreign minister there,
okay?
A man by the name of Peter Szijjártó. And the crux of it is that Szijjártó had been talking to his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, about meetings that he had with his European partners, okay? So he was going into European meetings with these foreign ministers and then getting on to Lavrov and telling him what was going on. Now, initially when this report came out, he said, ah, no, that didn't happen at all. And then he said, oh, yeah, it did happen, but I was doing it as an act of diplomacy. So saying, oh, I was only filling them in, you know, so we could make peace and this kind of thing. Total rubbish, right? Yeah. So what they've done here now is that since this piece was published, there's been a campaign against Szabolcs Panyi, the journalist. And it started off with a piece from a pro-government publication saying that he was. So they were kind of getting their retaliation in first, if you know what I mean, saying that he was responsible for spying on the foreign minister, okay? And now Orban has said that this is very serious and that they're going to press charges against him. I don't know if he's been arrested yet, but certainly an investigation has been launched and charges have been put against him.
Developing. With this election taking place in the next few weeks, who are the opposition in Hungary? Like, it's not Orban, then who is it going to be?
Yeah, so the leading opposition candidate is a guy called Peter Magyar, who's an advantage with his surname there because it basically means Hungary. He's ex-Fidesz, as far as I know, but he split with the party about 2 or 3 years ago. I think he would be slightly more pro-European, although you can't get much worse than Orban when it comes to being anti-EU, that's for sure. And what Orban is doing in his campaign is he's pinning the hopes of his campaign on this idea of the EU are coming to take our sovereignty, the Ukrainians are spying on us, there's lots of spies. So this is the crux of his campaign. I've seen postcards of Zelensky, or not postcards, sorry, posters of Zelensky, huge billboards of Zelensky depicted as the devil, and, you know, he's going to be in your bed at night, and it's kind of Reds under the bed type stuff, but in this case it's Ukrainians under the bed.
Yeah.
So it's really trying to create an idea of paranoia here. But look, with any luck, he'll be kicked out on the 12th of April, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider, what was it last year? The Pride Parade that went ahead, despite him saying, don't do that. Yeah. And even off the back of the music festival that's there, Ziggish, and not letting Kneecap in and all this. It seems like his days are numbered? Like, people are just not responding to this? People are seeing through this? Yeah. Or?
Well, hopefully. I mean, after 14 years, I suppose people are probably getting a little bit tired. But, you know, the effects of him not being there will be felt right throughout Europe. So it's a big thing to watch out for.
Yeah. This will have repercussions.
Oh, sure.
Across the board. Okay, over to Samoa then. I will say a lot of these stories have kind of a through line, and this is no exception. We have the Deputy Prime Minister here losing their seat over a $91 bribe. Tell us more.
So that's 91. That's 91 New Zealand dollars, right?
Do the conversion for me,
it's
please.
It's like 45 euros.
Okay.
All right. It's 150 Samoan dollars, if you want to know.
And
it's a weird one. So this is the Deputy Prime Minister, or former Deputy Prime Minister, Tolupe Wonsemo. And he was first elected back in 2021, right? And then there was recent elections. There was elections back in August, at the end of August 2025. And this is what's caused him a little bit of trouble, because it appears that one of his assistants or an aide or someone that was campaigning on his behalf gave an individual this 45 euros on the day before the election and said, here you go, vote for my guy, right? Now, this was discovered, and it was actually discovered by an opposition candidate who was running in the same constituency. She brought the case against him, and the court has found in favour of this opposition candidate, basically saying, yeah, this is a bribe. It might be small, but it's a bribe nonetheless, and we have problems with this kind of thing in Samoa. So we need to put a stop to it, and it doesn't matter how powerful you are, you know, you're going to suffer as a consequence. So they basically scratched the result. The deputy PM lost his seat that he has had, as I said, since 2021. And a by-election is going to be held within the next 3 months.
Has he lodged a legal challenge since, I think, to know he's...
No, he hasn't. So this started off as something really small. He actually didn't challenge the case at all. But what happened was, as the case was about to come to court, it appears that another bribe was paid, right? And this was picked up on by the court.
Okay.
Because all of a sudden, the application for this case to go ahead was withdrawn by the complainant, this opposition candidate.
Yeah.
And the judge, when he delivered his judgment, said, it appears that there was a payment to the equivalent of about 30 grand that was issued to this opposition candidate. This needs to be investigated. So all of a sudden, it begins to get a lot worse, and more people are being brought into this story.
Yeah,
so
there's a big difference between 45
and 30
just
grand.
The basis of numbers.
Yeah.
So this by-election then, when are they saying this is going to happen?
It has to be within the next 3 months. Now, the government as it stands are in pretty good shape, right? So there's 51 seats. There's only about 250,000 people live in Samoa.
Okay.
So it's 51 seats in total. I think the government had 32. They're now down to 31. But the fact that this was the deputy PM and would have been a significant individual, I suppose, in that particular party.
Yeah.
Is a big deal. And I'm sure this is a huge news story in that country.
Yeah.
And we all love a good corruption story.
Oh, I love a good corruption story, girls. Gets me going of a Tuesday. There you go. Poor Samoans. The US then, or the Netherlands? Where are we off to next?
Let's do the US, because this is an update on a story that I actually brought in a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And just to recap on it, it was the beginning of March. An individual, a man by the name of Jason Hughes, 40-year-old teacher from the North Hall High School in Gainesville in Georgia. He died in very unfortunate circumstances. So, as you know, at the end of school years, or, you know, when a term ends, a lot of pranks are paid.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular case, a group of, older high school students went to his house and they covered in toilet paper. Now, he knew this prank was coming, so he was up for it.
The teachers are all familiar that this happens.
Yeah, they're all familiar with it. And he went out and he tried to chase them away. But unfortunately, when he went out, he slipped, he fell. It had been raining, and he went under the car that one of the kids was driving. Okay, and the guy who was driving, Jaden Ryan Wallace, was 18 years of age. And he was charged at the time with homicide by vehicle in the first degree. And he could have got 15 years in prison. But almost straight away, the wife of this man who died, Laura Hughes, who was also a teacher at the school, she issued an appeal for the charges to be dropped. And it appears that those appeals have been heard. So all the charges have been dropped against this individual and the four other teenagers who had charges against them, but they were just misdemeanors.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I suppose, in this case, four or five more lives aren't going to be ruined off the back of this tragedy.
Because look, obviously, as you said, it is a tragedy, but it wasn't obviously supposed to go like this, and they immediately stopped whatever they were doing. Yeah. They attempted to provide first aid until the emergency responders got there. I mean, like, what a place of compassion to come from for this, because she also works in the school as well. Am I correct in saying
that? She does, and more to the point, and your point is well made about them getting out of the car and trying to, you know, give first aid. They were actually quite close, apparently. The kid who was driving the car and the teacher, he used to look after them, he mentored them in golf and other sports and things like that. So they got on well. And I suppose Jason Hughes, the teacher in this case, was up for the banter, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And it was just a horrible accident that happened. But I think what surprises me more than anything is the fact that the state and the people who, the police who were obviously issuing the charges, actually backed down in the end. I was quite surprised by that, but obviously they listened to the wife's appeal, so it's a good news story, I suppose, in some ways.
Yeah, that is a good news story, very quickly then, what's this about a musketeer being found under a church?
Yeah, so this is 350 years after the death of the legendary French musketeer D'Artagnan, or D'Artagnan, as
love
we might call him.
Oh, very good pronunciation there.
It seems that his remains have been found, right? So I'll keep this short, but back in 1673, he was up there fighting on behalf of Louis XIV, who was Palace of Versailles and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to take the city of Maastricht in the Netherlands. Don't know if it was called the Netherlands back then, but anyway, it was still called Maastricht. And he got a bullet through his throat. Or a musket pellet, or whatever you want to call it, and he died. It was in the summer, so they didn't want to bring him, repatriate the body. They decided to bury him there. And we know that the camp was near this particular church in Maastricht called St. Peter and Paul Church. And there had always been rumours that his body was underneath the floor. So they decided to excavate, dig it up, and lo and behold, they found some stuff.
I loved in this story that it was like, we've had loads of rumours and it's kind of been long rumour. We were like, we're just not going to go at it. And then a few tiles fell or something, and they were like, actually, do you know what? Maybe we should investigate it. And there you go. He was there the whole time. Fascinating. Jonathan De Burke Butler, thank you for taking us around the world today.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2. On News Talk. Conversation that counts.